Hello and welcome to Teaching My Cat to Read, the very serious book review podcast. This time we are doing our second episode on Temeraire by Naomi Ovik, because we talked about it last time and we want to talk about it more.
Because we're terribly disorganised. That's the actual secret. We're terribly disorganised and we were like, how much yelling can we fit
into 40 minutes?
One hour slot. Not enough.
If you haven't listened to the previous episode, we recommend you pause this one, go back, listen, and then come back to this one. It'll make more sense.
It will make a lot, and then this one is going to make much sense if you haven't listened to the other one.
We can do another summary. We can do a very quick, like...
Yes.
Okay, so the summary of the book, for those of you who weren't listening last time, is... Random naval captain accidentally adopts dragon. This is part one of the book. Part two of the book, How to Train Your Dragon, but with 1800s Austin protagonists instead of fictional Vikings. Part three, fight Napoleon, but with dragons. Does that cover everything?
Also, the dragons are all cats.
Yeah. That basically does cover everything about this book and why it's awesome. TM.
I have completely messed up with this whole pop filter thing, guys. I'm like holding it in place. It's cool. I'm
to
not
continue
giving up
on the theme
blanket,
of us being disorganized. You say that, but we got to the end of the episode last time. We just went, that wasn't enough. I want seconds.
I want more. Like, you know when Thor is in the film and he's just like, I want more. It's like, yeah, that was
yeah, we're all throwing our mugs down in front of the pop filters to our editor's dismay and being like, another.
So one of the things we wanted to talk about last time and we didn't get around to talking about was the lady dragon captains.
Yay.
Because there are certain species of dragon in the book which only will consent to have a captain that is a woman.
Oh, hey, no, I don't just want to talk about the lady dragon captains. I want to talk about all the women.
Of course.
This is a really nice thing about, like, oh, it's a historical fantasy. It would have been really easy for it to operate on the Smurfette principle. And instead we've got, like... so many interesting female characters.
Multiple women in my fantasy novel?
And we didn't talk about any of them, I don't think, really, except to yell about, like, how Captain Roland is amazing.
Yes, Captain Roland, I love her.
She's so great. But I was wondering, like, my inner English teacher came out, and I was like, why don't we could just work through them in, like, you know, not alphabetical, chronological order of appearance in the book, like people who know what they're doing.
Yeah, no? I think we should do that.
We don't know what we're doing.
Well, you volunteered to lead this discussion, so...
I don't know if it was clear to you, dear listeners, that we do not, in fact, know what we're doing.
Nobody
from
knows
the
what
last
we're doing. It's
14
fine.
Odd episodes.
I think we covered that by calling it the very serious book review podcast, right?
That's fair. Also, like, the cat is involved. If a cat is involved, you have to know that a cat laughs at all plans of gods and men. So, like...
just chaos gremlin embodiment. Anyway...
chaos gremlin.
Women in this book, why are they awesome? Tell us.
It's a section heading for a... yeah. Okay, so I think the first one we meet is Edith, who is... mm-hmm. Like, I am unclear on the status of her and Lawrence's relationship. I don't know enough about Regency courtship rituals. They're intricate. The rituals are intricate.
So, you know in Persuasion, where Wentworth has been, like, really friendly with one of the sisters?
Mm.
Yeah. And everyone's just like, okay, now there is an understanding. And that if you don't propose to her, you're going to be... considered to have done her a dirty, basically.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the situation that Lawrence and Edith are in at the beginning of this book, where there is an understanding that they are each kind of spoken for, but they're not actually engaged.
Right.
At least that's what I took from it. But that may also have been coloured by having recently read Persuasion and sort of had that kind of that paradigm
I mean,
of
like,
relationship
my,
in
mind. My only real like model for how anything works in the Regency period is Austen. To be honest, because everything else I've read set in that period is like, well, it's an Austen novel, but there are dragons. Or, it's an Austen novel, but there are magicians. Or, it's an Austen novel, but there's, whatever the hell is going on in Sorcerer to the Crown. I don't know how to describe that magic system.
I can't believe you would base your understanding of social mores in this period on an author who wrote extensively about the social mores period. How dare
outrageous.
You?
Outrageous.
Also, it's like, it's not exactly a period of history, which is... sort of repeated over and over, like, say, the Tudors.
Yeah, no, I didn't get taught about this in school.
The Regency period, we just skip it out. It's like, Henry VIII had some wives.
Now we're going to jump straight to World War II.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
If your school's making a desperate attempt to be, like, a good school that teaches things, they might attempt to cover the slave trade. They will do it incredibly badly.
No.
And you will want to fight them about it. But anyway, moving on. So we meet Edith.
Or moving back, Edith.
Yes. Who I do like, actually. I think, although I don't know whether that's coloured by, like, meeting her again in later books in this series. But,
Ooh, exciting. I'm planning to read the later books, and I haven't got there yet.
Okay.
But I'm just like,
I will stop
talking
about that.
Very excited. So every time Em mentions something from the later books, I'm just like...
But yeah, so I think we meet, like... Actually, we meet, like, three women in sort of quick succession, because what happens is Lawrence is taking Temeraire up to Dragon Hogwarts for training, and he decides to stop at his parents' house, where we run into Edith, who is pretty much ignoring him, I think. At least in front of other people. And then his mother and a random Miss Montague, is it? Who's like...
She's sort of a social climber.
Yeah.
Almost.
She's just like, dragon captain. Blech. Mm. Not going to talk to that.
There's this... one of the things I really like about Edith is the first time we see her, it's like, it's established that she and Lawrence have this understanding that they are headed towards engagement and marriage. And then he has basically become... By becoming a dragon captain, sort of through no real choice of his own, he's basically become ineligible to be married because the life of a dragon captain is just dangerous and lonely and like sort of incomprehensible to anyone who's not a dragon captain.
Yeah, and you have a dragon. You know.
Yeah, yeah, and you have a dragon which is taking up the bulk of your emotional
life. So I think there's two levels to it, because I think there's the social aspect, which I think does bother Lawrence, but I don't think it's like kind of at the crux of anything, which is that aviators are regarded as, I don't know, like, I don't know what, we don't really have a modern equivalent, do we? Just like, you completely, like, you're allowed to cut them dead in public, you don't have to talk to them, their reputations are terrible. You can't, like, no decent woman would ever expect to marry one, blah.
I think a lot about their reputation, because there was a bit at the start where you meet Lawrence and he's talking about these aviators from a quote-unquote naval perspective. And because everybody in the Navy has all of their uniforms, like, very neatly pressed, very tidy, very organised, quite well.
No, they do on ships that Lawrence runs. Lawrence is very biased about
which
this.
Which his runs. But then on the flip side, because the aviators are literally riding a fucking dragon, they're all of their clothes are messy. And so they get off this dragon and it's all a mess. And everyone looks at the mess rather than saying, they've just flown quite fast on a dragon. And... I think a lot of it comes into stereotype, that there's clearly this stereotype behind being a dragon captain means, therefore, you don't look after how you present yourself, and therefore, all this other shit that
we're going to
assume.
I don't know that they're, like, I think
Yeah, all these other kind of performative, like...
I was going to say, I think some of it is, like, I think it's... That's an aspect of it, but I think it's partially just that they are, like, completely removed from society, and I think you see later when, like... Yeah, when they attempt to interact with normal people, quote unquote, like, they just don't know the rules. And so people read that as a lack of moral character, because you're allowed to do that in this, like, social climate. You can be like, oh, this person doesn't know the unspoken rules of how the precedents and how we talk to people, therefore they're not a real person and I don't have to care about them. But anyway, I was saying there's a social status thing, which I think does disconcert Lawrence, because, it does mean that, like, he can't marry Edith, and his father is just really, really mad at him, and there are a bunch of other social consequences that he discusses, but, like, on a personal level, and I think this is one of the things I really like about Lawrence, is that on a personal level, what's important to him is that he recognises that this relationship is going to be the most important relationship in his life, and he wants it that way, and then he's like, I can't possibly imagine... Like, I can't invite anybody else into this because it would be doing them a disservice. And we've gotten off the topic of Edith again.
Well, no, I was going to bring it back. So these are the reasons he can't marry Edith, essentially. And what she says is like, in another book, you might have her saying, well, I still like you enough to marry you anyway and set aside these things that I want and blah, blah, blah. And I will be the wife that waits for you while you're so on. And she doesn't do that. She says, no, actually, I like you and we could have had a good thing. But this is too much and I'm out.
Yeah.
And it's great. She stands up for herself.
Yeah.
And Lawrence does not at all resent her for it. He goes, you know, that's totally yes, absolutely, yeah. You should advocate for yourself.
I mean, he almost goes too far the other way, doesn't he? He's like, oh my god, yeah. I'm such a cad for even thinking of asking you. I've put you in such an awful position. Yeah. And she's like, nah, chill, man. Just, we're done, okay? It's all yeah. cool.
Like, they use their words like adults yeah. and express their desires mm. and then, you know, come to a resolution. Yeah. And it's just really nice and refreshing in
yeah.
a book, like, you know, a setting where, like, in Austin, people don't use their words and it causes all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
And you could see that situation going pear-shaped quite quickly. And in this case, it's sad that they won't be together because they do like each other. But it is for the best yeah. because of all the reasons we
and
just
And you very much see yeah. why she and Lawrence might have been well-suited, in that he is the kind of person exactly. that is like, okay, in order to fix this situation, I'm going to have a quiet... We're going to have a quiet, private conversation in which nobody loses their temper and nobody gets dramatic and everybody's just, like, very understanding.
Reasonable and...
And I was yeah. like, oh, okay. I can see how you two could have worked if only there wasn't a 10-ton dragon mm. situation.
Monopolizing all yeah. of Lawrence's like emotional bandwidth,
yeah,
which again the dragons are just the dragon is just like, oh, this person, it's not even that Temeraire would be like jealous, it's just that he just does take up that much emotional
yeah,
space,
yeah, definitely,
and we love him for it, he deserves it, he's yeah. a good boy.
And then we get, it's interesting as well because I like that, like, okay, so they have this whole conversation about the way the dragon has changed their life, but Edith never actually speaks to Temeraire. And then we get Lady oh, Allendale yeah. and Miss Montagu really meeting him. And that is a study in opposites. Mm. And I really enjoy that. Two very different, of a similar social class, women going to talk mm-hmm. to Temeraire. And they have completely different yeah. reactions. So we get Lawrence's mother, Lady Allendale, whom I adore. And yeah, this random social climber that we mentioned before, who's incredibly rude to Lawrence at dinner the night before. Being like, oh, being a bit of a thrill yeah. seeker. She's like, oh, I want to go see the dragon. Maybe that'll be cool. Which... I'm kind of like, if I didn't know the dragon was a person, I would be like, okay, that's vaguely cool of you to be like, I want to go see the big dangerous thing, actually. But it's Temeraire, who's a sweetie, and I'm just like, this is disrespectful. This is disrespecting my boy.
Yeah.
To be fair, I think if I were in that situation, I absolutely would also be like, I want to go and see the dragon. Yeah,
but I tell you like, what, I would also be like, I want to ride the dragon. And Miss Montague's just like, nope, 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 have to go right now, immediately.
That's fair.
I'd be like, can I pet the dragon?
Yeah, we would be Lady yeah. Allendale, like, basically. Can I pet the dog? We'd be Lady Allendale. We'd be like,
yes.
Oh, he's beautiful. He's so well-mannered. I love him. I'm going to pet his nose.
Yeah, I know.
I think the difference is, like, Lady Allendale wants to meet Temeraire, and Lady Montagu wants to yes. see Temeraire, and, like, you know, as if he were an animal in a zoo, whereas Lady Allendale is very much like, this is my son's new
yeah.
life partner, basically, in a way.
I think it's interesting yeah. as well. Yeah, I think Lady Allendale is the first person outside of kind of the Lawrence Temeraire partnership that kind of looks at them and goes, and like correctly judges the position that Temeraire now holds in Lawrence's life. Because I get the impression mm-hmm. that like yeah, wider Regency society is just like, it's like a big scary horse, you know? It's just an animal and you don't, like, the idea that there's yeah. a relationship is very, like, yes. it just doesn't really even register to people. But Lady Allendale is immediately like, excellent, a 10-ton nursemaid for my idiot son who keeps throwing himself into problems. I'm just like...
yeah, she says to Temeraire, like, don't let anything happen to you. Yeah. It's just that whole interaction is so sweet and so just, like, yeah. wholesome.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, going back to, like, you know, there's multiple women in this book, and very early on in the book you get not one, not two, but three different women all having very different responses to this life-altering
yeah.
thing that's happened to someone they know, although in the case of Lady Montagu I don't think it's very yeah. well, and it's just really lovely to sort of be able to compare and contrast their reactions.
And I think it does a nice job of world building as well, because you get the more different opinions you get on the situation and the more different perspectives, even like the bits they choose to focus on tell you a lot about society and about them and about how dragons, like the concept of dragons and like how that changes the world that we're in, like even if you were familiar with the Regency, this is kind of giving you a, like, here is a crash course on how this looks to other people, you know, and putting that all in the mouth of female characters instead of kind of continuing what could very easily be just a very male dominated novel. I really, really like
it could have been very easily, I say, just because I've been reading The Hobbit really recently for a future episode, and obviously, that, you know, The Hobbit and the whole Lord of the Rings is a not only product of its time, it is like the first fantasy book, quote unquote. But it's all men. All of them are men. And it was, yeah, again, it was just so refreshing to have all of these female viewpoints. Yes, the protagonist of this book and one of the main characters is a man, but that doesn't mean that everyone else is as well. And also his interactions with other
women. That's a good point. Yeah, we should talk about that.
How he grows. Yeah, because he... I mean, one thing I did notice was when he talks to... is it Harkor?
Yes.
Is it who's the dragon captain? And he says, oh... he calls her captain, and then basically they get together, and then he switches to Catherine, but he calls her by her title prior.
Well, okay. Well, actually, first, he calls her Miss once.
That is true, yes, once, and then gets corrected.
And he immediately is, like, mortified that he has basically disrespected her by not using her military title, yeah, because of his sort of implicit bias that, like, she's a girl, yeah, like, you know, she's a young yeah, woman, and in the narrative he says to himself, I absolutely cannot make that mistake again. It would be the height of rudeness and disrespect, and yeah, I need to make sure that I get this right, and precisely because she's yeah, a girl.
And it's also an interesting one. I mean, I think I did mention at the time, like, realizing during this reread that, like, in many ways Rankin is a narrative foil to Lawrence. But, like, that's another place where we get contrasted reactions. Because Lawrence, upon meeting Harcourt, is like, okay, I'll be polite in my way. That's not correct. I'm in a different context. Polite means this thing now. I think Rankin only ever calls her Catherine or Harcourt, or Miss Harcourt. He never calls her captain.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, a massive red flag. Even without her reaction to being forced to sit next to him, is a massive kind of like, okay, this is the difference.
This guy is a prick.
Yeah, this guy is a prick. And also, this is why, like, you know, Lawrence is maybe going to be all right in this situation, because he is actually learning.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely felt it was really satisfying to read from a male perspective of this guy going, hang on a minute, I've got privilege here. Mm. I need to go and check my privilege. I need to go and get rid of my implicit bias, and I need to learn to call people by their correct title. And I've called her Miss because this is how every single other woman I've met in my life has been called. But now I'm Ron, and I've got to go and learn. And it was just really refreshing to read. I don't know why it was really refreshing, but it was.
Like, he messes up once, and that is it.
Yes.
Like, and it's a very consistent process with Lawrence. That's another thing I enjoyed, actually, was that, like, he has that moment over and over again. And I'm not just talking about in this book, but he has that moment over and over again where he's put in a situation and his, like, sort of previous training is like, I should react to this in this fashion. And then he's like, hold on a second. That's not right. I know that's not right. And then he fixes it. Like, it...
Yeah.
I tell you what, like, I have been getting frustrated as I've gotten further in with how much, with the sort of, like... Okay, so maybe sit down and have a think about this outside of the immediate, I've offended someone, what did I do wrong, I'll fix it. But again, I think that is how it works, isn't it? It's a lifelong process, and people don't... And, like, as well, he doesn't have all the frameworks that we have for talking about this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, the concept of checking your privilege or whatever didn't exist, you know? Like, and the fact that he's doing all of this without a map, as it were, is very admirable. But...
I really like the moment where he realises what a piece of garbage Rankin is. And he looks back and goes, I've been befriending this man. I've been very publicly befriending and basically condoning his behaviour. And he's appalled. He's ashamed of himself. He immediately sets out to figure out how he can fix it, but not from a perspective of, I want to rehabilitate my image, but from a perspective of, I want to make sure I don't continue to make the other captains uncomfortable. Yeah. And it's just, like, such a great character moment and such a good blueprint for, like, how to behave in a situation where you've realised that you've done something that makes you ashamed of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it, going back to Em's earlier point of the reason that there are women in the Dragon Corps is because the most dangerous dragons, the most aggressive ones, will only have female riders.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's why there's all these women there, like, learning. And then you have, is it Baby Roland, the kid?
Mm, Emily.
Of Mummy Roland, Roland, who turns up later, which I thought was brilliant. So there's, like, this little 11-year-old girl who's in the Corps, and she wants to be on Temeraire's, I say, team.
Crew,
I don't know what the
correct
word is. But crew. Like, on the crew. There we go, that's the word.
Because they're sort of compared to ships, right?
Yeah.
In the sense that they have, like, a captain. And
I like that they have mid-wingmen. That makes me very happy.
Yeah.
Yes!
And I did love how, like, Lawrence just goes around adopting all these small children and then teaching them trigonometry.
Yeah, and they're like, why do we have to learn maths? Go away. You're not my real dad. And he's like, you will learn maths and how to wear ties, damn it.
and so we meet this, like, kid, this little girl, and then later on we meet her mother, who is also a dragon captain, and this is someone who Lawrence ends up getting together with. But yeah, it was just very nice change when this moment where he realizes, and I can't remember if we mentioned it in the previous episode, that
the realization moment, like, so Roland being one of the what Lawrence at the time thinks is a boy who's, like, helping him out with Temeraire and with Levitas,
I remember it was the moment where Captain Roland says, "Oh yeah, she is my daughter," because these dragons outlive us, and they prefer to have somebody who's a family relation.
And she says, we breed ourselves just as much as we
breed
them.
Yeah, I think that's another interesting...
And Loris is just like, what? Yeah.
Well, that was the bit I was gonna bring up, actually, was this discussion that he has with her about, like, children and having children and, you know, because I think that's something that he had given up on in his mind, along with, you know, Edith. Mm. And the seeing the way that he treats the crew, like, the young members of his crew, is just, like, dad material. Except, like, you know, it would have to be, if he was going to have a kid, it would have to be a kid who understood what Temeraire meant and the relationship and sort of, you know, was okay with the fact that a parental figure was basically, like, also married to their dragon. Yeah. And sort of, it's this really nice bit where you see throughout the book him opening up to, like, an entirely different way of living where, you know, Roland's kid, Emily, is totally fine with the fact that her mum is a dragon captain and the weird life that they have to lead because of that, and is an active participant. And, you know, he doesn't have to give up on some of the things that he might have wanted in his life. It's just that they're going to look very different.
I was going to say, I'm thinking about that. I think there's, and this kind of leads into the second thing that we didn't talk about, which is kind of how having dragons, like, allows you to sort of comment on the social mores and social justice and things of Regency society. But one of the things I think is interesting is that what I kind of fixated on for that bit, and I definitely agree with Eli that, like, there's so much of this that is, like, Lawrence coming to terms with maybe there's a better way of structuring your life and your relationships. I also quite like that conversation because it's an interesting look at sort of, I guess it's a blind spot of Lawrence's, but, like, he's really shocked by the way that Captain Roland says that we breed ourselves as much as we breed dragons. And he's kind of vaguely horrified by that, and sort of, like, it seems he's kind of like, oh, this goes outside my idea of, like, you know, how family. And offspring are married. And it seems like he doesn't particularly enjoy thinking of himself as livestock, I think, which is fair enough. But it's interesting to me that he doesn't make the connection. It's not that different from what marriage among the upper classes is at that time, particularly from a woman's perspective. It's about preserving the bloodlines.
I was going to say let's go the other way and say, if he is a person and he doesn't like being thought about this way, and the dragons are people, but they are thought about that way.
And also women are people and don't enjoy being thought about that way.
Yeah,
I guess that's what I mean about where I was saying previously, I get a little frustrated in later. Like, he does get a lot better at it, but I think something that, I guess maybe because as well I'm aware that it's something that I didn't do as much in my younger days and I wish I had, was seeing these, like, small instances of injustice and discomfort and cognitive dissonance and then taking them through to their logical conclusion. You know, going, oh, I'm uncomfortable about this, so maybe it's wrong.
Yeah, rather than just, like, going, oh, this is normal.
You know, or if I feel this way about it, maybe other people feel this way about this. Or, I tell you what this is reminding me of, actually, is that, have we talked about before there's a reading of 1984. There's like, they talk about like a ghost novel beneath the novel where, like, you know, all I was talking about, all this horrible, like, oh, these it's people trying to carry on a love affair under state surveillance and it's illegal and they have to be really careful who they trust and when they're seen together and all of this. And he's imagining this, like, horrible reading. Thing for heterosexuals when he was writing it at the time, that was what queer love had to deal with constantly. And he's just completely, potentially, unaware that, like, what he's describing as this horrible futuristic dystopia is literally happening to other people contemporaneously with him writing this f***ing novel. And it's the kind of, it's the sort of, like, what if, Lawrence, what if you had to be bred for the good of the nation? And it's like, you mean, like, literally a bunch of other sapient life that you interact with on a regular basis has to?
Yep. Going back to the gay point, the whole, like, re-examining the structures of your life and evaluating whether or not they actually make you happy and whether or not they make sense and whether or not they're ethical. It reminds me of the whole, you know, if you're queer, there's no blueprint for dating. It's not like, you know, who asks who out? Who pays on dates? Who's supposed to do the washing up and who's supposed to do the gardening? All of these things about how your life is supposed to go and these blueprints he's been raised on, he has to question them. And that's like, that's a big old queer experience. That is a big gay mood.
Well, I was talking to a friend of ours about this, and she was saying that she really, really enjoyed Roland and Lawrence, Captain Roland, this is, obviously, like, relationship with Lawrence, because it's very queer, because he's having to put aside all of these, like, you know, we've kind of seen the pattern that he expected his relationships to take, right, with Edith. You know, you have the unspoken understanding, and then you have engagement, and then you get married and have kids, and then you settle down.
And have children,
And suddenly he's confronted with a woman for whom we've already established, like, none of these things are true. Like, your home is your dragon. There is no settling down. There's no engagement. There's no marriage. You will have kids, but the approach will be so pragmatic that it will make you kind of uncomfortable. And,
so what do you actually want? What do you actually value of that life that you'd imagined? Which bits do you want to keep and which bits are you willing to work to make happen, and which bits are you happy to let go?
I guess it's like, which bits did you think, oh, this is gonna happen because this is how I've seen it in everyone else in my life, and now he's kind of got this like other life where he needs to think about, okay, I've been raised and thought one way, and this is how every single other person in my life has presented, this is how life works. And now I've got a completely other option, and it is also okay to like this other option.
Yeah.
Like, I love the way that this is really presented by the end of the book as liberating for him, and he is happier, he is more fulfilled, and he's more able to examine, like, well, when the social climber comes back to him at the end of the book and he's like a decorated war hero, basically, and is trying to schmooze with him because he's now got social status, even though at the beginning of the book she was very dismissive of him, he's able to go, actually, no, I don't value this anymore. Yeah. I'd rather go back and hang out with my captain friends because they get it.
Or I'd rather go hang out with my dragon and our naturalist friend who didn't realise that he was a celestial all those months ago.
The dragon and the orchestra at the end, just like watching the dragons listening to the music. That was the best bit, I think, of the whole
book.
It's
so cute. I think we talked about that last time. Just, actually, one of my favourite moments in the whole book. It's so cute.
The warm fuzzies. The warm found family fuzzies.
Fuzzy
feelings.
I tell you what I did enjoy as well, that, like, while it is portrayed as a very liberating experience for Lawrence, it's also not without its flaws. Because I think that's like one of the strengths that he brings to it, is the fact that, like, because he's an outside perspective, I'm going to harp on about this forever. Like, sometimes he's right. Or, like, I agree with him about, you know, what's wrong with the Aerial Corps, because, like, they let Rankin get away with shit, for example. And sometimes I think he's wrong. And I actually wanted to bring this up with the Choiseul Harcourt thing. Because, okay, so there's a spoiler alert. There is a French spy who joins them sort of, I think, about halfway through the book, and he claims to be betraying France and he wants to help them because he's anti-Napoleon and all of this.
Yeah.
And in the end, it turns out that he's been working for Napoleon the whole time because Napoleon threatened to kill his dragon. And he basically seduces Harcourt,
who's like 16?
Who is portrayed to be, 15, 16-ish. Yeah. She is a girl.
And it's really interesting because, like, you get a lot of, you get the sense of, particularly with the, with baby Roland, that like the aviators are just used to having women around, and they don't, with the exception of Rankin, they don't really see them as being different. There's this kind of just like, they're just an aviator. Like, yeah, what, you don't have a gender. You're just, your gender is aviator, and you know, like, yeah.
It's about as consequential as the gender of your dragon.
Yeah.
You know? They're just, it might matter for breeding
purposes. Basically, yeah, exactly.
But that's about it.
But that has flaws, right? Because that's presumably why. Like, I mean, so Lawrence early on notices that Choiseul and Harcourt are getting close, and he kind of goes, ooh, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. Like, there should be a chaperone or whatever. And then he's like, so, like, it's a social, it's an instinct born of his societal training rather than maybe an ethical one.
But he's still right.
But he's going, okay, I'm not sure that's okay. And then he's like, okay, well, we're in the aerial corps. Maybe they do things differently. And Harcourt can take care of herself. Except that when we find out that Choiseul is a spy and they have to put him in prison and he will only talk to Harcourt and Lawrence goes with her for moral support, we find out that, like Lawrence basically throws the fact that Choiseul has seduced a girl barely past her schoolroom years in order, and it's despicable and it's awful. Yeah. And you're like, hold on a second. Like, okay, so it's wrong now? Which, like, pick one, Lawrence. Mm. Like, you know, it's kind of, there's a double standard somewhere in there. But, like,
I guess the argument would be that it would be just as despicable if it was a young boy. Or it was a young, an adolescent, like a teenage boy.
I guess, yeah, that's true. But it's, again, I guess it's one of those things where I'm sort of like, I think it shows how complicated the whole coming into this thing from the outside is. Because he, in some cases, Lawrence very much trusts his instincts. And sometimes those instincts are correct, and sometimes they're not. And this is a case where I think he doesn't trust his instincts. He's like, okay, this is just how it is in the aerial corps.
Maybe, yeah, this is how it goes
and
down.
Like,
yeah.
And, you know, and I should, like, respect the choices of both of the people involved in this. It's not my business. But at the end, he's beating himself up for having made that decision and kind of being like...
Well, another angle on it is also, when he is uncomfortable with it initially, it's not because he thinks that Choiseul might be a spy
seducing her
for, you know, nefarious purposes. It's because he thinks the age gap is inappropriate and, you know... And while that's true, it would be equally horrifying, well, not equally horrifying, but it would be just as much of a betrayal and just as sad if Catherine Harcourt were 29.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true.
You know, it would be just as much a betrayal of the relationship that had been built.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And so, in a way, there are two different discomforts that he's dealing with.
Yeah, and
with
I don't think he's quite separated them all out either. I'm not sure I have even, because I think there's levels. Mm. Because there's a societal thing just generally of unmarried women shouldn't hang out with unmarried men. And that's something that, like, comes back later when, baby Roland has grown up a bit. And, and actually, like, with Harcourt again later as well, it comes up. And I think Lawrence has a bit of a... I think the one thing that I think he doesn't... I don't think he quite consciously gets for a really long time is that he still has... He's still very... He gets a lot better at treating women as equals, and he gets a lot better at kind of understanding, like, you know, that they get to make these choices and, you know, society might be wrong about this stuff. But in times of stress, he falls back on those instincts.
Yeah, being paternalistic.
Yeah.
Like wanting to protect, but at the expense of letting people make their own mistakes.
Yeah.
I guess.
Because, I mean, there's a really interesting... He talks to, I think, when Captain Roland gets sent to join the fleet at one point, and he has this conversation of, like, with him, it's a little argument with himself about how he doesn't have... He wants to be, like, to protest, and he's like, oh, I definitely would be as upset about this if I wasn't sleeping with Captain Roland, because I think it's really dangerous and I'm not sure it's the right military decision. And you're kind of sitting there like, would you, though, Lawrence... You don't have the right.
Yeah.
She outranks you. She's a captain. This is none of your goddamn business. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it comes back to that whole, like, re-approaching, like, re-evaluating all of, like, how society works and how you've been raised. Yeah. Which we wanted to talk last time about how the dragons are a really interesting, like, they parallel Lawrence in this being not raised in regular society. They're all aviators because they're all dragons, and the way that they sort of have this outside, like, throughout the book Tamriel talks about whether or not he wants to be involved in war,
yeah,
and where his loyalties lie, whether they're to England or to Lawrence, and would he...
Or to France, would he, or... Yeah.
Well, not well to Temeraire. For Temeraire, it wouldn't be France, but, you know... But, like, you know, does he... You know, he is loyal to England because Lawrence is loyal to England, and he wants to do what Lawrence wants to do. But there are times when it's like, you know, Lawrence puts his life on the line for England, and Temeraire's like, why are you doing that? Why would you risk your life?
And then Temeraire is like, actually, I will let any number of other dragons get killed as long as I can rescue you. And Lawrence is like,
Yeah. But like, one of the alternate titles we had for this, for last week's episode, was like, Help My Dragon is a Jacobin.
Yeah.
Where there's this conversation where some of the dragons are discussing like ethics. And it's really interesting.
Yeah. But they basically go like, yeah, they cry no taxation without representation, essentially. They're like, if you can make laws that affect us, we should get a say in the laws. And Lawrence is like, next you'll be throwing tea into the harbour. And I'm just like, Lawrence, you f***. They're not wrong, actually. They're not wrong.
Yeah, it's really interesting to have this sort of... The dragons are very clearly people, but they also are not part... They you know, they're not part of society, but they obviously are very much affected by it. And so to see them be able to, like, you know, yeah, give their opinions on it, even if only to their captains, it's just really interesting. Yeah. And it does remind me, again, of the whole, like, take a step back and look and see if this system is actually working for you.
I did like how... I think my favourite thing about like the whole Temeraire being like a sentient being was just how he was... Lawrence decided he was going to learn Latin to teach Temeraire about Newton's laws of motions, the Principia Mathematica. But like, from the Latin, it just... But it also, I think, highlights how Temeraire was kind of also an outsider because his intellect is so much higher than the other dragons. Like, they can't... I kind of got this feeling that they're both... kind of outsiders because Temeraire doesn't know how to act around other dragons. He's grown up with like on the Navy, like his whole like growing up stage on a boat, and so he asks a lot of the time of, oh, can I do that? Can I spit fire? Can I spit like acid? What do you think I'll be able to do? Because all I've got is like little frilly rough thing, and I can't really do much else. But yeah, I really really like that, and just how his and Lawrence's relationship is just adorable, and the fact that, again, like you were saying, that how Temeraire is, he's trying to understand his place in the world. He's like, I want to go to war, but I'm scared, but at the same time I want to hear your naval battles. You know,
and yeah, just a kind of the tension between, like, he doesn't want to follow stupid orders, and there are a lot of stupid orders, you know. He doesn't want to, he wants to be free to be actually making that choice, you know. Like, there's a moment just before they're due to fight the sort of climactic battle of the book where Temeraire goes, oh, I think I understand now why you keep saying we have to fight. And it's because it's the one good line that came out of Star Wars The Last Jedi. It's like, we're not fighting to destroy what we hate, we're fighting to protect what we love. And I think he gets that in that moment, but also that the tension in the book is like, that's completely different from what the military, like, the military is not really designed for that.
Yes.
Like, it's a good way to get noble people to die for you, but it's not actually what, like, half the time that's not the system that they're interacting with, and that's not how, that's how they get you. That's how they get you into the, like, military-industrial complex of the British Empire. But
where Temeraire was, like, talking about how, oh, who do you fight for? And Lawrence's like, oh, I fight for kin and country. He's like, well, Temeraire's like, well, who do I fight for? Like, I
didn't vote for you.
But I don't know, who is this king person like? And then he's like, oh, well, this is... He's like, well, but I don't know who this king is. Can I go visit the king? Can I go and ask him why we're having this war? It was just a really, really cute way of thinking about it, because Lawrence has this loyalty to this country, but Temeraire's loyalty is to Lawrence, and I think Lawrence alone... You know, and the other dragons, obviously.
And but... like, I think Temeraire is asking good questions. I mean, did we mention it last time, that the quote, I think it's a rabbi, I don't think it's Heschel, but the child that thinks that everybody should be, everything should be fair and equal, and everybody should be happy all the time and get what they want, and the child is right.
It's saying that the child naively looks at things and goes, oh, this is unfair, and, you know, the world should be fair, and everyone goes, well, the world's not fair, but the child's like, well, we should make it fair, and the child is right. That is, I've definitely seen that before.
And I think that's very much Temeraire's vibe. There's a lot of things where, like, he's asking, like, really pertinent questions about sort of, what do I owe a king that I've never met who, does a lot of things that I disagree with. Why should I, like, from a complete accident of birth, essentially, I am property of this person that I've never met, and I've got to fight and die for him. What's that about?
Yeah, because he does have a very interesting point of, you know, if I'd been on the French ship, he'd be fighting for the French side. And so it's just pure coincidence that he's fighting for the English side.
Yeah,
doesn't actually have that sort of family loyalty to either country. It's just coincidence.
Yeah.
Have we run out of talking about the dragons and ethics and...
I had a question for you guys, actually, which is, I think we've basically already decided that we want to fight Rankin, right? I think we're like,
oh, absolutely.
That was the conclusion of the last episode, that we're pretty much all like, we are going to stomp on Rankin and there's nothing you can do.
Also Lord Allendale.
I think
I do very much want to fight Lord Allendale.
Close second would be the French spy guy.
Yes.
Being leery. Just, yeah.
Yeah. It's bad. Yeah. It's a bad time. But more interesting, since we've been talking a lot about the women, I was wondering, like, I don't know what the equivalent is. We don't have a girl gang because Lottie is the only girl here. But who would we invite to? I'm trying to think of the equivalent of, like, who would you invite to, like, your dinner party? Because we also don't really do that. Who would we invite to Craft Noon if you had to pick?
Zoom dinner party.
Who would you invite to join your D&D party?
I think Lady Allendale and Captain Roland with Baby Roland, because it's this cute child and like... And also, I mean, to be honest, I think all of them. Like, apart from the lady who's...
Okay, you can only pick three. You can only pick three for your hypothetical dinner party.
Lady Allendale, Captain Roland and Harkle, because Baby Roland can be babysat by Temera. There we go.
Are we including... We're talking about humans, specifically.
Oh, that's a good point.
I'm assuming the dragons are coming too. They can come too.
Okay, so now we have to consider people and their drag... Like, humans and their dragons as a unit, right?
Yeah, otherwise there's no space.
Because I would absolutely want to talk to Temeraire. I would also want to talk to... The messenger dragon, where his dragon's just like a big donkey.
Oh, Volley! James and Volley, yes.
Yeah, Volley, who's just like, you know, like when you get big ginger boy cats that are just really stupid. Like, they've never seen a brain cell in their life. Like, that is what this dragon is, and I want to hug
that dragon.
It's
so cute, but idiot.
Yeah, basically.
We love him.
Yeah. I love how, like, just, like, solid his relationship with his captain is as well.
Yeah, where he's just like, oh, my dragon's an idiot and I love him so much. It's just like, what a perfect representation of cat owners, honestly.
Yeah, I want to get to know Edith better, I've got to say. Yeah. I want to get to know Edith better, so I'm kind of like...
Doesn't she end up with, like, a kind of annoying man, but she's probably going to be okay with him? I can't remember how the book ends up, but you say that she comes back in later books, Em, so
I think we meet her future husband, and Lawrence is kind of like, he's a tool, actually.
Yeah, he's like, he's not good enough for her, but it's none of my business, so I'm going to stay out there.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I need to read the rest of this series. Basically,
yeah,
I need
so
to. But here's the issue, though. It's just going to consume me for however long I'm reading them, and I need to make space in my life for that to be a possibility.
I think we're just going to have to like have a set book, like podcast episodes on just this series, just because we systematically start going through them.
Well, that brings us quite nicely into what else we've been reading.
Exactly. And I was going to say, I finished the book that I was reading ages ago. I mentioned it on this podcast like months and months and months ago, of The End Times, which is a book about how all of the different things that could cause humanity to go extinct. Mm-hmm. And if you can believe it, I did skip the chapter on plague.
Yep, that's valid.
That is so
valid.
But it
was really good. It was depressing. It was super depressing and scary, but it was really informative. So that's what I've been reading. And now I'm going to read the rest of the Temeraire series because I need some like light, fluffy something in my life.
Oh boy. Okay. Stop before book five.
Okay. Does it get real? Does it get serious?
Okay. So like they're all pretty much like steadily going into like maybe the British Empire is the bad guys actually, with all the kind of attendant...
Yeah.
Of that. But book five is like Lawrence's depression book.
Oh no.
Book five is like Lawrence is having a really, really bad time.
Okay.
Like, he does get out of it, but it's a good like it's a good stopping point. You're like, I need to take a break.
Well, you're gonna be the one who's lending the books to me anyway, so you can just cut me off at the appropriate point.
Yes, this is true. Lottie, what else have you been reading?
I mean, as I mentioned earlier, like what I've been reading in advance for future book episodes, but looking at our like our Instagram and like the people we follow on our Instagram page at teach my cat to read for the little two number two. There was one book that cropped up a lot, which is called Legendborn by Tracy Dion, and all I've sort of worked out is like it's a really diverse book, and it's set in like future America plus magic, but it's like if the descendants of like the Round Table, but it's basically Arthurian adventure with Southern Black culture, and I was gonna read it and see if I enjoy it, if we could do it on the podcast, but I've downloaded on it, I haven't started it yet, but it just proved that on the Bookstagram post, like we are making a note of books that keep cropping up on our feed, especially those that, and I mean for me personally, like I'd love to read more diverse books, more like queer stories, more just more stories that are outside of my like straight white female life, you know, that's where I am, and fair so yeah enough. It'd be nice to read more books outside of that, so I'm starting that soon and I'm really looking forward to it.
Awesome.
Nice.
What about you, Em?
Well, I've done that thing again where I pick up multiple nonfiction books and don't finish any of them. So I am in the middle of Conflict Is Not Abuse by Sarah Schulman, which is, the subtitle is Overstating Harm, Community Responsibility and the Duty of Repair, which kind of, I think, covers everything that I've seen in it so far. It's I'm really enjoying it. It's difficult, you know, because I feel like there's a lot of things that I agree with, and then there's things where I'm like, I can't tell whether I'm uncomfortable with this because I genuinely disagree with it, or because this is a bad habit that I have and I'm feeling defensive, you know? It's it's gonna take my brain apart, I can tell. But it is very interesting, and I've been meaning to read it for ages, so that's good. And I also started Eat Up by Ruby Tando, which I don't really know how to describe it. It's a book about food and about how amazing food is and how good eating is and how much we should all enjoy it and not worry about it too much, basically.
Excellent.
She was the one on Bake Off. So
that's very
wasn't
pleasing.
She? Was she the one on Bake Off?
Yes, she was.
Yes, and she has a great Twitter account. She's really funny on Twitter.
As you can see, we're big Bake Off fans here.
So yeah, that's a nice, like, that's been my gentle reading. Like, and my brain gets taken apart by Sarah Schulman and like stabbed a bunch, and then I pick up the Eat Up and I'm just like, I'm going to enjoy these really like good descriptions of good food now.
Excellent. That sounds like a good combo. And I'll tell you what I'm going to be reading in the very near future is The Hobbit, because that is going to be our next episode, or our next couple episodes, because we are once again doing a two-parter, because we actually know this time that we're going to have way too much to say.
Yeah. This is a planned two-parter. This has been scheduled from the beginning, unlike this.
Yeah. And so our proposed plan is that the first episode, we will not be discussing the wider Tolkien legendarium, or the adaptation.
Including the films, yeah.
So we will be solely talking about the book itself.
Just the book alone, yeah.
And then the second episode, it will be a free-for-all on ragging on the adaptations and talking about wider Tolkien stuff, because, like, God only knows if we're ever going to do an actual Lord of the Rings. I was about to say episode, but series.
It would take us forever. We'd have to devote, like, a whole year to it.
I'm such a bad, like, fantasy nerd, but I've never read Lord of the Rings, so...
It would have to be a whole sub-podcast.
Oh my God, like, that's so cool, though! You're going to be coming in it, like, completely fresh?
I mean, I've watched the films.
Yeah, but, like, it's different.
The books are so funny. Like, they're unexpectedly funny. Anyway, this is all stuff we could be talking about next episode. But as you can tell, we're really excited to do some Tolkien, and yeah, starting with The Hobbit, and yeah, I'm so stoked, because I'm the world's like biggest Tolkien fan, and we will also very excitingly be joined by our audio editor and general coordinator and maker of making the podcast happen, Rowan,
herder of cats.
Yeah, very
so
exciting.
that's going to be awesome.
Yeah
so we'll see you then.
Yeah, so yeah, thank you all so much for listening. Please like, subscribe, review us on your podcast platform if you're able to, and share it on your social medias. Because seriously, like every time we get like a little like on our Instagram or a share or anything, we just go around on our group chat, and it's just very exciting. So seriously, it makes our day.
See this? Somebody said something nice about us. Look!
It's so exciting when we get a little email, someone saying, "Oh, I really liked your podcast." Oh, it's just so exciting. Anyway, so yeah, if you do want to send us an email, you can see the contact information on our website, or you can send us an email to teachingmycattoread@gmail.com, to being T-O. You just add hello there in the subject title so we know you're not spam, because yeah, we get spam. So yeah, say hello, send us a message and recommend us some books to read. Big virtual hugs, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.